Matthew, we're going to read verse 1 all the way down to verse 13, and we'll try to stay together during this time. All right, Matthew 5, 1, begin. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Thank you. You may be seated. So we're looking at this evening at verse number 13, which says this, Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. I want to preach this evening on this subject, ye are the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. Now we are now entering into the second part of the Sermon on the Mount. Even though we're entering into a different part, these thoughts are really connected. As a matter of fact, they cannot be separated. We cannot study this, really the whole entirety of the Sermon on the Mount and really this first two sections separately, because we're going to understand in just a moment, he basically says, you are the salt of the earth. He doesn't say, I want you to be. He says, you are, based on what? Based on if you follow and adhere to the teaching that I've already taught you. And we'll see that in just a moment. But these Beatitudes at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, we understand go straight against what this world promotes and what this society stands for. The world that looks at the teachings of Christ will only mock and ridicule it. Jesus Christ here is addressing, we understand, the disciples. He's not telling them, I say that over and over again because it's important, he is not telling them how to get to heaven. He's not telling them this is the rules you need to follow in order to earn heaven. He's telling that to a group of people who already know they're going to heaven, who already know they have eternal life because they've trusted Jesus Christ as the Messiah, the long-awaited Messiah. Now again, the word disciple is very important. This series is being discipled by Christ. As we see the beginning, he says, seeing the multitude, we expect him to go to the multitude, but he goes the other way around. He turns to the mountain, and as the disciples come unto him, he teaches his disciples, and he begins in this Sermon on the Mount. Now, the disciple here is a pupil, a learner, someone that that not only hears the teachings of Christ, but someone that decides to adhere to the teaching of Christ, to what he's being taught. The word disciple cannot be separated from the word discipline. The attitudes that must be found in us, think about it, the poor in spirit, the mourners, the meek, those that hunger and thirst after righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemaker, these things will not happen without any discipline in our lives. And so we cannot separate those words. Now we come here to verse 13, and we now see a different aspect, if you would, of the Sermon on the Mount. We talk about the attitude that must be in us, but now we talk about really the responsibility that we have to have an impact in this world. In other words, he says here, you're all the salt of the earth, and then he talks about you're the light of the world. And so those two expressions speak of the impact that we need to be having in this world. Now with that said, we're going to go right into this verse this evening, and next week we're going to deal with verse 14 down to verse 16, where he talks about the light of the world. But this evening we're talking about being the salt of the earth. Now, I want us to consider the first thing that we see. First of all, we see the distinction of a disciple. The distinction of a disciple. I want you to notice the words. And I was reading a lot of material when I was preparing for this message. And I was thinking about finding someone that said something about the first two words. And I couldn't find anything. Notice, ye are the salt of the earth. I think that's interesting. The two first words, ye are. The word ye points to the disciples. Why? Because of verse number 11. Notice, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. And so he is addressing his disciples. And here again, ye are is referring back to verse 11, referring back to the Beatitudes. If those things are found in them, you as a disciple will be persecuted. If you follow the Beatitudes, therefore you will be persecuted. And therefore, when you are persecuted, you are the salt of the earth. Think about the expression, the words, ye are, declares their state of being. That's what you are. He did not say you will be, or ye will hope to be, or ye have been, or ye will become. He declares to them, ye are. It's a present indicative. So the Lord Jesus Christ is still addressing the disciples who are following him. If the disciples simply adhered to the teachings of Christ concerning those Beatitudes, and then they would stand in great distinction from this world. That's why he says, ye are the salt of the earth. Now here's the distinction that needs to be made. This is their present state of being, ye are, if they're persecuted for righteousness. If they are persecuted for Christ's sake, you are a disciple. Now, the persecution is based on what? On righteousness and for Christ's sake. Righteousness is what? It is exemplified for us in the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. And so we see the Beatitudes. And so those are what the disciple ought to live by. As a disciple, these things ought to be found in us. Amen? I hope we understand that. Think about how that stands in contrast than this world. When he says, ye are the salt of the earth. You see, the disciple is poor in spirit. The disciple of Jesus, that's what he is. That's his state of being. The world embraces pride. That's totally different. The disciple mourns over his sin. That's his state of being. But the world ignores and even rejoices in wickedness. The disciple is meekly patient when provoked. That's what this beatitude teaches. But the world is short-tempered when provoked. We understand that the disciple hungers and thirsts after spiritual things, but the world indulges in fleshly appetites. We understand, based on those beatitudes, that the disciples give mercy, but the world pours out vengeance. The disciple pursues purity and holiness. He is pure in heart, but the world excuses holiness and promotes sin. A disciple brings peace. The world stirs up strife. The disciple is persecuted for righteousness. The world persecutes the righteous. So when he comes here to says, ye are the salt of the earth, that's their present state of being if they've chosen to adhere to the teachings of Jesus Christ. You see, those who are persecuted are the righteous. They are persecuted for Christ's sake. Who are the righteous? Those that adhere to the teachings of Christ concerning those Beatitudes. You see, living a Beatitude life makes us salt. Do we get that? Sometimes we have the idea that, oh, we have to be salt, and we equate that to, oh, we got to go out and witness to the nations. Although that's part of it, I understand that. But what does it mean to be salt? To be salt means that we are living those Beatitudes. We are not salt unless those Beatitudes, the attitude that must be in us, are found in us. You see, we cannot fulfill God's purpose for our lives until we fulfill God's purpose in our lives. So, this is the distinction of a disciple. He says, ye are the salt of the earth. That's your present state of being if those Beatitudes are found in you. And if those Beatitudes are found in you, you are standing in great contrast to this world. That's a challenge for us. So what must we concentrate on? Sometimes we make a big deal about being salt, but I believe we can't deal with this verse 13, without understanding the Beatitudes that have to be present in our lives. So we see the distinction of a disciple, but number two, we see the design of a disciple. You see, he says, ye are the salt of the earth. Well, salt, that's an interesting thing. What does that mean? What is he trying to communicate here? Well, salt is a crystalline compound that consists of sodium chloride. It is used especially to season and preserve food. How many of you like salt? Okay, beyond, I love salt. I used to be more of a sweet guy. Like sweet things when I was younger, but now I'm gravitating more towards saltiness, okay? That's kind of a change that took place. As a matter of fact, I don't really enjoy a whole lot of candy or chocolate or things like that. I used to more, but now it's more towards the salty things. But salt has been important to man as a seasoning and a preserving agent since prehistoric times. When you look at the history of salt, it is quite impressive just looking at it within an encyclopedia. In history, we come to understand that salt use was considered very valuable. As a matter of fact, in barbarous times, many nations sometimes made a bag of salt worth more than a human being. That's how valuable salt was. The Roman Empire, as well, for a time, paid its soldiers with salt. With a bag of salt. From this we get the expression, you're not worth your salt. That's where the expression comes from. Where someone didn't do the work that they were supposed to, therefore they weren't worth their bag of salt. That's how they got paid. You see, we also know, even in the Bible times, that the Jews prized salt as a preservative of food and also because it was required in sacrifice in their worship. For example, Leviticus chapter 2 verse 13 says this, and every oblation of thy meat offering shalt thou season with salt. Every one of them. He says, neither shalt thou suffer the salt of the covenant of thy God to be lacking from thy meat offering. With all thine offerings thou shalt offer salt. How many of you didn't know that? Because with all the offering, salt was to be given as well. Interesting. We also know that salt creates thirst, doesn't it? I was thinking when we were traveling on a deputation. My dad actually was doing his master's in a school in Arizona, and the director of the school, his name is Jerry Tetro. I believe he's still there in Arizona. But he took us out hiking one day, and I remember were you there, Mark? Did you go with us hiking? No, it was, I think, the three older one of us boys. And so we went, and he was kind of teaching us a lesson. Now, something he did every time, I don't know if you remember that, Jerry Tetro, he would pour salt in the palm of his hand every morning, noon, and night, it seems every meal, and he would go, I've never seen that before. My dad, I think, every time, he said, why are you doing that? Well, he would give us a lesson on why he did the salt. And he would talk about salt a little bit, and he did that consistently. But something interesting is when he said, hey, I'm going to take you boys out hiking in the Arizona desert. Now, it was summer, and it's pretty hot there. Now, I like that type of heat because it's dry heat. It's not humid. So it's better than Florida because it's kind of a dry heat, so it doesn't feel as warm, it's still pretty warm because it was 103. And so we go out, and he says, look, guys, you got to prepare. He says, when we go out hiking, something you have to watch out for is that you think you don't need to drink because you don't perspire. You say, well, because it's so hot that the moment you perspire, it evaporates. So you don't even know you're sweating. He says, so you have to drink even when you don't think you're thirsty. And he says, we're going to put something in your lemonade. What is that? Salt. Why? Because the salt would help us to drink more. And by the way, when you do perspire, you lose salt as well. But that's just another thing, a part of the story. But what he says is you have to have salt so that it makes you thirsty so that you drink even when you don't want to drink. So there's a lesson there. Our testimony, by the way, should create a thirst in others to want to want what we have. Shouldn't it? Now, in Jesus' time, I think the primary application of this verse deals with salt as a preserving agent. You see, in Jesus' time, the disciples would understand what Jesus Christ was referring to. For several of them, as fishermen, they would use often salt to preserve fish until they would be sold at the marketplace. Perhaps some of those Galileans would go down to Jerusalem and they would sell those on the marketplace, but a fish is not going to get from Galilee to Jerusalem without any salt. It's not going to be preserved. As a matter of fact, it's going to rot quite easily. And we know that things happen very quickly. I remember we got some crabs, Maryland crabs. I think it was Delaware Bay crabs, and we did it in a mistake in the backyard. Okay, and flies were there instantly, and then we put the rest of the crabs in the trash can, and the trash can smelled like fish for a very long time. Okay, so just the lesson here is if you ever do eat real crab, okay, don't do it in your backyard and don't put the trash in your trash bag. Okay, that's just a side note, that was free tonight. But all of this reveals, okay, all of those things about salt reveals this, how valuable salt is. You see, when considering the truth of this verse, we are emphasizing that salt and being a seasoning, we are emphasizing salt as a preserving, a purifying agent, as something that is very valuable to society. Now, salt has, and really throughout history, has two main purposes, if you would, or has two main designs. The first one is that salt is designed to purify. Scientists inform us that the salt content in the oceans of the world are extremely important. For without the saltiness of the oceans, the great oceans would be great areas of corruption, which would plague the earth with disease. Can you imagine all the trash and all the filth that goes into the oceans every year? How does this, while some areas are not so clean, but how does an ocean as a whole stay, keep from corruption? Because of salt. You see, believers ought to have a purifying effect in this world. Salt does such a good job preventing the growth of bacteria that in earlier centuries, when a soldier in the British Navy was called before the mast and lashed a couple of dozen times, a bucket of salt water was thrown on his back was considered sufficient medical treatment to prevent his wounds from infection. You see, why? Because salt purifies the wounds. So the presence of a believer should cause people to question their behavior in the workplace, at the family get-togethers. Why? Because we ought to purify the environment that we are in. I remember when we were down in Dover, and my brother and I, Stephen, we went out to play basketball in the neighborhood at a basketball court. And so we were just playing by ourselves, and then a group of young men came, and they want to know if they want to play a game. So we said, sure, we'll play a game. And so we were kind of, separated the teams, and then we began playing. And then as in many cases it happens, they begin to curse. Why? Because we were winning, okay? And so as they begin to curse, I thought to myself, I said, well, this is not going to happen here. I said, fellas, I said, we'll play with you, but you have to stop the cursing. I said, we're Christians, and we don't want that around us. Guess what happened? They stopped cursing. Yeah. We ought to have a purifying effect in this world. As a matter of fact, we were got playing the game, and they did a pretty good job up until the end, and they were right about to lose, and then a word almost came out. He said, oops. You see, that's just a small example. That is the type of effect we ought to have in this world. A purifying effect. When we are around, it ought to show. When we walk in a room, people ought to change their conversation. It ought to purify things. It ought to. Salt is designed to purify, but salt is also designed to preserve. You think, until advanced refrigeration was prominent, salt was the main ingredient for preserving food, especially meats. This is clearly illustrated in the life of Lot living in Sodom. You remember? God said that if there was only 10 just, righteous people in Sodom, He would keep Sodom from destruction. That's all God needed, 10. And He could not find 10. If 10 were present there, Sodom would have been preserved, even in its great wickedness. Why? Because of the presence of righteous people. You see, salt exists solely to purify not itself, but that which needs its service. Knowing, therefore, that salt purifies and preserves the world, I want to ask this question, what does that say about the world? Left to itself, the world is rotten. You see, the world is in a state of decay. Our world is rotting away if left to itself. You remember the illustration that Daniel gave when King Nebuchadnezzar came and he said, I have a dream and I'm seeing this statue. And remember he describes the statue? Remember how he described Daniel chapter 2 verse 31? Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image whose brightness was excellent stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image head was of fine gold, the breast of his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part clay. You see, this was the dream of Nebuchadnezzar that was communicated to Daniel. Now, the image is a prophecy concerning the future kingdoms of this world. Later in verse 37, he says this, Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the breast of the field, the beast of the field, and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee. So notice here, the picture is you have the head of gold, then it goes to silver, and then it goes to, we see the silver, the brass, the iron, and then the iron mixed with the clay. So what does that communicate about the future world kingdoms? That as we go along this world, they get worse and worse. They decay, they become weaker and weaker. And finally, there would be the death blow. Daniel 2:20-44 says, In the days of the kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to another people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. You see, the world is rotting and decaying rapidly. And Jesus says, Ye are the salt of the earth. It reminds us that we are the preserving and purifying force in this world to prevent complete and total corruption. Although the world may hate the Christian, I think after this verse they ought to be grateful for the Christian. So we see the distinction of a disciple, the design of a disciple, but thirdly, I want us to consider the danger for a disciple. He says, Ye are the salt of the earth, but notice he continues by saying this, But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it, now who's the it? The earth, be salted. It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. You see, in Christ's day, salt would often reach the consumer in an imperfect state. It would be mixed with earth many times. The blocks of salt would often be stored in that state, containing a mixture of salt and sand. Often, in moist weather, the salt composition would trickle away. The block would keep its natural shape, but it would always lose its flavor over time. For food, it was no longer good for seasoning. For meat, it was no longer for preserving. And so we understand, therefore, this block would become good for nothing. The only other use for it would be for it to be pounded and grinded and to be poured or thrown on slippery pavement where it was to be trodden under the foot of men. And Jesus says that this is the potential. You are the salt of the earth if those beatitudes are in you. If this is the way you live your life, you are the salt of the earth. But be careful, because it is possible for salt to lose its savor and to be cast away and trodden under the foot of men. It's possible. You see, a saltless Christian is one who has reverted to the earthly, the worldly, and the carnal. He's someone that has reverted to the opposite of being a poor in spirit. The opposite of being someone that mourns over his sin. The opposite of someone that is meekly patient when provoked. The opposite of someone that hungers and thirsts after righteousness. The opposite of someone that exercises mercy. The opposite of someone that seeks purity and holiness. The opposite of someone that brings peace. The opposite of someone that is persecuted for righteousness. You see, we lose our salt when we embrace pride in our lives, when we begin to no longer mourn over our sin, when we become short-tempered and not patient anymore, when we indulge in fleshly appetites, we begin to lose our saltiness. We are reverting to the opposite of what we need to be as disciples. But you know what happens? Just as salt, it happens slowly over time. It does. Slowly, over time. You see, when the Christian forsakes the Beatitudes, he loses his savor. When the Christian becomes enamored with the world, he loses his savor. When the Christian seeks to accommodate the methods of the world, he loses his savor. When the Christian spends more time pleasing the world than pleasing the Lord, he loses his savor. When the Christian grows cold to the things of God, he loses his savor. You see, when the world has more influence on the Christian than the Christian has on the world, he has lost his savor. And that should tell us something. Now, a Christian cannot lose his soul, but he can lose his savor. We must be very careful that we do not lose our savor. Because if we lose our savor, wherewith? Wherewith? The question is, shall the world be salted? If we lose our savor, how can the world be purified? How can the world be preserved? It cannot. Why? Because we've lost our savor. And what do we become? The Bible says it is thenceforth good for nothing. We become good for nothing Christians. We're not worth our salt. But to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. Why? Because there's no use for us in this world anymore. That is why it is so concerning to me that you have churches now who are enamored to impress the world and have no desire to impress the Lord at all. They've lost their savor. Can I say this? Wherewith shall the world be salted? If the believer, the church, has lost its savor. You say, well, how do we know whether we're savory or not? If the Beatitudes are found in us. If that's what we promote. You see, as a church, this is what we ought to promote. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are ye are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. These are the salt. And so really, being a salt is kind of the gauging factor to show us if we are having an impact in this world or not. You see, in just that little example at the basketball court, we could have played basketball and have had a zero impact. Zero impact. We just played ball. I remember we were right beside the church. And in Dover, and the basketball court now is no more. The city took it out because of a lot of the drug issues that were going on there. But we were playing basketball one day, and some guys came over, and they weren't really some pleasant guys to be around based on their language and all that, but we played basketball, and we beat them, by the way, so that's always good. I always enjoy winning. But then we turn around and say, hey, you know, we'd like to have you all come to church, and I wonder if you all know that you're going to heaven when you die. So we tried to witness to them, and then we left, and I think it was John Howard Jr., he was with me, he says, man, that's the thing that I just want to, I just can't do. And I thought, well, it was not like it was easy for me. It goes against my nature. But there's two choices that we have in this world. We can either live those Beatitudes out in our lives and be salt, or we can just sit back, lose our savor, and let the world go on and do what they do. So really the question we can ask ourselves is, are we worth our salt? Are we salt? If those Beatitudes are found in us, we are salt. If we are not salt, we need to revisit those Beatitudes and say, this is what is not in me that needs to be in me. You see, I think that everybody would say in their sincerity, and there's many people, Christians and churches, that say, well, we want to reach the world. But there is no desire to live the Beatitudes. And it cannot happen that way. We cannot substitute Christianity for something that it is not. What is Christianity? What Jesus Christ said at the beginning of those Beatitudes. So may the Lord help us. As he says those words, can you imagine what it must have been to the disciples? Because he didn't say, I want you to be salt. You can be salt. He said, ye are the salt of the earth. And may the Lord help us to be the salt of the earth.